audiobook.
Treasure Island, as read by Hardy White, as written by Roderick Luth Stevenson. Chapter 1, The Admiral Benbow. Jim sat at the bar of his family's tavern, the Admiral Benbow Inn. He liked to help out there and serve rum to the many sailors and pirates who came in during the day. They would step off their ships onto the dock and be very thirsty. The Admiral Benbow Inn would serve different kinds of liquors, mainly rum, but also whiskies and gin from far off lands. Sometimes they would cook sausages or little black pieces of meat called preptopops that they would serve to the pirates. If you are at sea for many months, you are deprived of the nutrients that you need to survive, like vitamin C, or vitamin D, or vitamin B12, or ricin, or nephrontiazin, or other things that the human body needs to thrive and heal itself. And so, at the Admiral Benbow Inn, they were famous for their delicious key lime pie slices that they would serve with a dollop of cream. Jim would like the smell of the bacon key lime pie that would waft out of the kitchen. He enjoyed the way it would combine with the aroma of rum and of large guttural burps from the pirates. All the interesting smells in the inn combined together. Intestinal gas, pipe tobacco, the smell of the fireplace even in the middle of summer when it was 100 degrees, but there was still a fire going because sometimes the pirates had lice-infested clothing and would need to burn it in the flames. And they would sit there in the nude, their large, distended bellies covering their privates, drinking rum and coughing, scratching their sores and laughing. Today was no different than any other day, and Jim decided that he was going to clean both spittoons and the vomit bucket. But first, he was going to go down to the stream and see if there was any tadpole biting. He liked to fish down there and would make a fishing pole out of the bones of some sailors that didn't make it. They'd bring them back and they'd put them in a big pile and people could take them for different things. The skulls were very popular to store spices in, and the leg bones came in handy to use as hammers and things. But sometimes there'd be a very tall pirate whose fatibia would be long enough to be a fishing pole. And this is what Jim used that day. You could take their intestines, too, and make cord out of it. Sometimes you could catch big fish on it. And Jim was hoping that today he would catch a Goliath grouper or something that weighed to 600 to 800 pounds, and so they'd have enough fish meat to last all winter long. His father would pull the fish out of the stream and salt it and chop it up. "This is the way we make our salted chopped fish," he would say to Jim. "Someday you will be running this inn, as I have over time from now at this point," said his father. Jim was having no luck at the stream, and suddenly he heard a loud commotion coming from the inn. It sounded like a fight. He ran back and peeped through the window. It was a brawl. One of the sailors had gotten angry or something and smashed another sailor over the head with a bottle of rum. "I hope they're all okay," said Jim to himself. "I hope that nothing is getting broken." And as he said that, a chair and a sailor came flying through the window, barely missing Jim's head. "Uh-oh, this is getting out of hand," said Jim. And he ran inside and he got back to the kitchen as fast as he could. He grabbed his father's musket and loaded it with muscatel. And then he went out into the area that where the pirates were fighting, and he fired a shot. Boom, it went. Boom went the musket, and the whole place fell silent. You must stop fighting as of now, said Jim. This is a respectable inn where people drink and also spend the night. And people who have spent here among the notable guests are the following. Queequeg from the Pequod and others. The crowd of fighting sailors was stunned into silence. They looked chagrined and ashamed that a little boy was having to chastise them such. And they quieted their fighting and slowly sat back down to eat their belly fat and rum sizzles. Jim was proud of himself. If my father and mother were here, which they're not, inexplicably, they would be very proud of me.
Aye, they would, said a voice.
Who's that?
Oh, is I Blind Pew, said the voice.
Blind Pew? Why can't I see you?
Oh, wait a minute, I meant Invisible Pew.
Invisible Pew?
Yes, you can't see me. Sorry, I had it flipped.
Invisible Pew? Are you a pirate?
Yes, I be a pirate.
Jim wasn't sure that this invisible pirate was really what he said he was. There were lots of spirits and strange demons around these parts. They would gather at the dock because there's different types of demons and diabolical monsters that enjoy fish and various other seafood. Some of them will come out of the nethers and up from hell just to have a certain type of barnacle or shellfish. Clams, oysters, and the other ones that are disgusting that come out of the googaloogs or whatever they're called are among the things that they like to eat. Gooey. Jim collected his thoughts. If this is an invisible pirate, I need to play my cards just right because it could be dangerous. What do you want, Invisible Pew? Would you like some rum?
Invisible Pew, doesn't he drink the rum? No, me boy.
Are you all right, Invisible Pew?
No, I'm not all right.
I'm not all right. What's the matter? Said Jim.
I'm cursed.
You're cursed?
Yes. I got the black dot.
You got the black dot, said Jim. What's that?
Well, in a pirate thing, they'll give you a black dot.
Is that like getting blackballed in a fraternity? Asked Jim. Jim had been in a fraternal organization at his boys' boarding school when he was even younger. He wanted to join the club desperately. It was a kite-flying club, and he always loved to fly kites. He'd see the other boys out there enjoying themselves with kites of all different shapes. One was shaped like a ship. Another, a different kind of ship. Yet another was shaped like a horse. Yet another was a horse on a flying ship shaped like a horse. He wanted to fly a kite too. And one weekend, he stayed home and put together one that looked like a castle. He brought it out to the boys' kite flying club. Look at me, said Jim. I have a kite too. Can I be in your club? All the boys laughed at him and stabbed him with knives. He was rushed to an area hospital where, because the knives were made of paper, he was able to survive and was merely traumatized. But he never forgot this. And when he woke up, there was a single black ball on the table next to his hospital bed.
Yeah, it's that.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Jim. I know how bad rejection can be. I'm sorry, just as an aside, a lot of this text is very blurry. This is the editorial note. The copy I have of Treasure Island is one of those that I guess they just used an optical scanner on the old-timey text. And lordy, lordy, half of the words it doesn't even know what they are, and it's making them up. And then I think AI extrapolates. So I beg your pardon if some of this doesn't really sound like the original version you know. But once we get to Long John Silver's, I think that you're going to, it's going to sound familiar again. Oh my gosh. And it resonates too, because don't you, I know this is too much of an editorial comment, but I'm exploring a new genre, and that is books on tape, director commentary. So it's a book on tape, but then I talk on top of it. And I've been doing this. You have done this before, Hardy. I have. Where I speak on top of the book on tape. If you do it just right, the way I like to do it sometimes is have the commentary be the actual text, but just with a slight delay. So that every time you reread something like this, it was just sound like an echo, then we were having fun that day. And, so that makes it something very different. Also, are you going to get back to the story? Yes, I know you say Invisible Pew is visiting the Admiral Benbow. I know where we are in chapter one, and we're all like two pages in, and this is a 300-page book. So I didn't even think it's just going to take one show. This is going to be a lot. And just the amount of water I have to drink. Oh my gosh. I remember when I did the book on tape for Rudolf Rocker's Nationalism and Culture. Or is it Culture and Nationalism? I don't know. The version I did was Nationalism and Culture. I almost said John Rocker, who was a relief pitcher for the Braves in the 90s. And I don't know if he's still around. Bless his heart. Bless everyone's heart. And let's get back to our show. Jim looked around the bar. There was fewer people in it. A lot of them had left after the fight because they'd been severely injured. Let me ask you a question, Invisible Pew.
Yes.
What ship did you get off of just now? Did you just get in? Have you always been invisible, or did it just recently happen?
It happened on my last journey. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not making any of this up. This is all in the text. It says to do this. And there's a transliteration there, and I'm doing it as close to the original as I can. And here's something I learned before even doing this, because I was saying, I'm getting ready to do this, and I'm struggling with the pirate voices. How do pirates really sound? And someone told me all pirates, even if they were from different other countries, all had the West Country accent. Zoiter, like that. And so you just do that as best you can. I go, well, I can't do accents very well. And that one's tough. And they said, well, you know, you could model it on that fella on Time Team, the one who wore the Tom Selleck shorty shorts, because he had that kind of a West Country accent. Say, okay, yar, yar to you, my friend. Yar.
Invisible Pew got off a ship. Okay, listen, hang on. I'm just going to say it like this.
That's fine.
Do you mind if I drop some of it, of the weirder vocalizations?
No, I don't mind at all. I just mainly want to hear your story.
And indeed. All right, so I'm on this pirate ship. And it's captained by the notorious... It's spelled Long John Silver, but I think it's pronounced Longjon, or something like that.
Oh, all right. Like, just like the name St. John is St. John.
Yes, exactly. So it's Lungeon Silver or something. Anyway, we're coming onto this island, and I don't know whether it's Bermuda, Bahamas, or Bimini. Some bee island.
All right.
And we land there. And I'm going to stay aboard. You know, because I don't know. Sometimes I don't feel like going ashore.
I understand. I get it.
You know what I mean? He's just, I'm just going to hang out and read.
Uh-huh. I understand.
And, you know, it isn't often I get the quarters. You know, I don't have a private cabin, so it's nice to get the sleeping quarters to myself. Blind. I used to be blind, Pew, before I was invisible, Pew. So I'm just hanging out on the ship.
Uh-huh.
And this thing, I guess it's a person, very small. And now I know it was a demon. And I don't even know what I said to it. I'd say, what? Or something like that. And before I knew it, I was invisible.
Oh, no. So you didn't even know what you did or anything. It's just he made you invisible. That's so unfair.
I know. I don't know whether it was a cultural thing. You know, you got to be so careful when you travel. Oh, we go to these islands. I think I'm doing something very innocent. Very innocent. And oh, all of a sudden, I've insulted the king. I can't tell you how many times this has happened, but I guess this happened with the demon, and now I'm invisible.
Oh, all right.
Oh no.
What is it?
It's Silver. He's coming in.
Just then, Jim looked up, and he saw a menacing figure standing in the doorway, silhouetted, because he was backlit, because the light was behind him, and the inn was dark. And so, standing in the doorway, you just saw the outline of him because there wasn't enough light to illuminate the features on the front of him. But he could see that it was some sort of pirate captain, dressed in pirate clothing, with a tri-cornered hat, and you know the type. And so Jim said, "Invisible Pew, why is he here?" But Invisible Pew was gone. He had scurried out the back. So terrified was he of Long John Silver. Or Longjean, I think it is in French. So Captain Silver stepped in.
"Yar," he declared. "I be wanting rum now, me boy Jim."
Like that. And Jim said, "How do you know my name?" And Longjean Silver said,
"Ah, I don't know. But I'm going to sit down and you're going to bring me rum, boy."
"All right. Would you like any cider?"
"Cider?
Cider?
Cider, cider! I don't know what you're saying."
So he sat down, and Jim went and got a bottle of rum from the back and brought it to the notorious pirate captain, one leg of which was wooden. He had a wooden leg as well. It was his left leg, but he wore it on his right. And so it was to cause confusion. On his left side, he wore a saber, and on the right side, a pistol that looked like a dueling pistol from back when they had dueling pistols. But because this was back when they had dueling pistols, it looked like a modern pistol. He took the rum, and he put the cork, because it had a cork, it was that kind of rum, in his mouth and popped it out. He poured himself a tankard of rum and then recorked the empty bottle. "Why?" Jim stared at him in disbelief as he chugged the entire tankard of rum. He said, and as he wiped his mouth with his sleeves that had brass buttons all over them. And so I was screaming in pain as each button tore at his nostril as he trying to wipe his face. Poor Long John Silver.
What are you doing here, Captain Silver?" said Jim.
"Oh, me boy, Jim. May I call you Jim?"
"Yes," said Jim. "Jim's my name."
"All right then, boy. I'm here because me ship, the Angela Lansbury."
"The Angela Lansbury?"
"Aye. No. Anyway, we landed a fortnight ago, and I have come here for supplies. We're looking for some hardtack and limes."
"Limes?"
"Yeah, for the scurvy.
Limes don't give you scurvy.
No, no, no. They prevent it.
Oh, okay. And the hardtack?
The hardtack's for eating. You dip it into something else, like ranch dressing, and you can live on it.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, and we need a barrel of apples.
Oh, I know. We can get you a barrel of apples. We have a guy who has an apple orchard, and he lives, oh gosh, it's like, it's a good 5 miles, but it's a wonderful place. And I don't know if you've ever gone there for apple picking. I remember when I was in school, we made trips almost every year. They would do an apple picking field trip, and it was really the highlight of our year. And we would bob for apples sometimes, and they would discuss different varieties and tell us what an heirloom apple was. And it was just magical. And then we'd take home as many as we could carry and perhaps make a pie or any kind of other kind of apple things.
You know what I like?
What?
I like, I'm not going to lie, I like applesauce with my latkes.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, good, because I feel like, you know, sour cream.
But you can do sour cream and applesauce.
Arr. Can ye, though, my boy, Jim?
Jim asked Long John Silver whether he would like any food from the kitchen. He said, "Where kitchen's fits into clothes in a little minute, so if you want anything like sausage or anything like that, let me know now. Some things I can make up to the last minute, but the fryer, I got to shut down the fryer about, well, at least a half hour before we close. So I'm going to do last call for chips, and then I guess I could, I mean, up to the last minute, I can make you a sandwich, Marmite or some stuff like that. I don't know how hungry you are," said Jim. The captain took a deep breath.
"Jim, me boy, any chance that it we could get that apple barrel tonight?"
"Oh, I guess we have one that we haven't really cracked open yet."
"Oh, I'll buy it off of you."
"Oh, all right.
As long as you help me take it to the ship."
"Sure.
When I'm finished with this bottle of rum that is empty, but I'm not done looking at it. I'd like to look into the bottle of rum a little longer. I'm seeing visions in it, Jim. I see visions. I see, you know what I see in the bottle?"
"What?"
"A ship."
"Oh, that's creative."
"It's at sea."
"What's it doing?"
"Sailing."
"Where is it sailing?"
"From one side of the bottle to the other. From the next side of the bottle to the, what do you call it, the punt?"
"I don't know."
"I don't know either. But listen, bring that apple barrel to my ship tonight, exactly at midnight."
"All right, that's a little weird, but I have a handcart, and I could probably do it myself."
"All right, that's a good boy, Jim. That's a good lad." Arr, arr, arr.
And with that, the captain got up and left. Jim thought about what had just happened, about how Invisible Pew had warned him that there were demons aboard the Angela Lansbury. But Jim longed for adventure. "You know," he thought to himself, "I could take that apple barrel and then hide inside of it. And then I could stow away on the pirate ship and be a pirate myself. And my parents wouldn't miss me because, frankly, I'm not convinced they exist. I feel like it's been years since I've seen them. Now I'm thinking I've been running this place single-handedly. And I'm what? I don't know whether I'm 13. I don't know how old I am. Gosh, I could be in my 30s. It's the rum, it's the fumes. But gosh, I'm going to do it." And so that night, Jim wheeled the apple barrel down to the docks and up the ramp to the deck of the Angela Lansbury, Her Majesty's sample, Angela Lansbury. And he put the apple barrel on the deck. And then he opened it up. He opened the lid and he crawled inside of it.
because it was half empty. And I don't know if he mentioned that to Long John Silver. And I don't know whether he's going to be excited that he bought a half empty apple barrel. But maybe that's, you could just put a little sign on the outside that says contents, some settling may occur of contents. And so it doesn't, it's not really a half empty bag. It's just that the contents settled. Haven't we all settled for the content of our lives, really? Do we have to? Can't we just drop everything and leave this burden that is the Admiral Benbow in and go off on an adventure? I remember when Monica Vitti in Red Desert, she's like, I got to get out of here. And I really like to follow Richard Harris to South America. So maybe I'm just going to wander up on this ship. And then the guy, the sailor who's speaking another language goes, I don't know what it was, another European language. So I'm not, that's not racist if you mock Europeans. And she said, I don't understand you because I'm Italian. And he said, I don't know. And so she leaves. That's a wonderful film. I'm sorry to interrupt. I know that none of this is actually in the text of Treasure Island. It says, I don't remember Treasure Island sort of name-dropping Antonioni films. No, you'd be wrong. You'd be right there because that's anachronistic. Some things just can't happen. I can't stand it when someone tries to convince me of something that's completely anachronistic. So there's no way that, you know, say, oh, yeah, O.J. and Hitler used to golf or something. It doesn't, the years don't line up. So that's how you know something is off there. And AI won't know that always because it doesn't understand time the way that we do. And it'll say, hey, yeah, I think there's still time to make that train you missed 4 years ago. You say, but I don't think there is. And I say, but I'm a modal realist. There are multiverses. Can you get to the other ones? I wonder. Can you get there, Hardy? You can't get there with matter. So I don't mean to give anything away. But that's the thing, I guess, the time traveling that kind of bogs everybody down. They go, okay, can I try to go? Well, not with your body. So can I with my soul, with my spirit? No. Well, then how do you get there? It's really complicated. And that's not what the show is for. Look, I've thought about it. Say, hey, I just do the recreations of the time traveling and I talk about it. Do I owe people an explanation? Should I be just doing the math? And I've thought about it. And it would just be, I feel like it would just be a string of meaningless numbers. And then it's just really, truly is just number radio.
5, 7, 8, 2, 2.
Which is nice. I don't mind that. That's fine, too. I was going to just read Treasure Island, but all the words are numbers. And then I thought, maybe I don't think anybody will catch on. I mean, for the one person who figures out what I'm doing, they'd be like, oh, my God. What? He's reading Treasure Island, but every word he's substituting a number. Well, how do you know that's what's going on? Because some of the numbers he's saying like this. 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 3. So it doesn't take a genius, really, to figure out what's going on. Jim gets on the deck of the ship. He's in that apple barrel. And the minute he pulls that lid to, he hears a voice. He doesn't know what it is. It's muffled. Could it be Squire Trelawney, who I haven't talked about yet? But he's also in the book? Or one of the other characters that's in the book that I haven't mentioned yet? I can't remember any. Captain, what's his name? Could it be one of them? Could it be Silver himself? He heard more mumbling. He kept very quiet. I can't come out of the apple barrel yet. They'll take me back home. I have to wait till the ship is at sea. I've got to stay there that long, at least. He heard more mumbling.
She's gonna win already, win already, win already.
And then laughter. Ah, they're doing that Mel Brooks 2,000-year-old man routine. I recognize it. And so it's somebody with a sense of humor. And I'm pretty sure that Long Silver has a sense of humor. So Jim decided to be quiet. Then he heard something sort of disturbing. It was a poof on top of the lid. I think somebody, like a pirate, had sat down now on the apple barrel. Jim was trapped. Even if he did want to get up, he couldn't. There's some pirate sitting on it, and he wouldn't take his shine nicely to having that lid upended that might cause him to fall over off the barrel. So Jim remained still. Just then he heard something else pile on. What's on top of this barrel, he thought. Layers and layers of pirates. What if there's hundreds and hundreds of pirates on top of the barrel? I'm trapped here forever. And then on top of that, they're flying some kind of stinging flying skull demon. The type that made Invisible Pew invisible. They could be coming for me. Jim began to panic. There was less and less air in the barrel. Oh, it's kind of stifling in here. And why don't apples smell like apple? What do they smell like? I don't know, but it doesn't smell like apple. Maybe it's cinnamon I like. Do I not like apples? No, because I like caramel apple. So maybe there is an apple flavor. I like sour apple. I like sour apple when it's in candy. Is that the same thing, though? I don't think it is. Jim began to panic. He couldn't get his breath. How do we get out of here? He thought maybe he could eat through all the apples, go through the bottom of the barrel, tunnel into the lower decks of the ship, and then out the bottom of the ship into the sea. And then once into the sea, be eaten by all the slimy things and giant fish that eat people. But once again, he wasn't sure if they had even left the dock yet. I need to stop panicking, he thought. We haven't even left the dock. And when we do, all pirates are going to need to be doing all the stuff, all the pirate things that they do. For instance, rope holding and mopping and conditioning the wood with oils such as tongue, lemon, linseed, and others that will bring a lustrous shine and help preserve the material that keeps them afloat and must be constantly doted upon and repaired. That is the nature of wooden things. Wooden things held together with rope, hemp, and wood. The whole ship was organic. Even the tar. Because tar is just dinosaurs that have been stepped on repeatedly for millions of years until that they're kind of black, like the black greasy stuff that oozes out of Irving's workspace in Severance. And all those things come together to make the ship. And there's one invisible thing. No, not Pew. The most important invisible thing for a ship, and that's wind. Wind. The wind is the power behind the ship throne. It blows the ship. The ship steers itself by harnessing the power of the wind. Jim longed to hear the sails billow with it. The way the wind filled them and shot them off onto their adventures in such faraway places as the Caribbean, the Caribbean, South America, North America, all the ships at sea, Capistan, Ajapan, Fanjapan, Shmoland, Australia, Tanzania, and other places all across the globe. Oh, the seas are vast, Jim thought. Vast like the life of humans, which are not vast at all. They're tiny. Little islands in this sea of life, or sea of life sustaining life that is life. Oh, whither the fates may blow, thought Jim. Blow me, fates. Blow me. Jim was worried that he had yelled that out loud. Blow me, blow me, blow me. Like that, coming from the barrel of apples. And he had.
Blower, blower, blower.
But the pirate who was sitting on the thought that he was yelling baloney and shouted out to his shipmates, Yar, the apples be shouting baloney. And that's where we get the expression, the apples are shouting baloney. And that became a song, a beautiful song even, by Michel Legrand that we all know and hum. It's very familiar and it's in a lot of things. Do you remember the old, here's just an aside, this is just like pop-up video. Old VHS pop-up video, did you know, kind of thing. Isn't this fun? Did you know that when they were making Treasure Island, that they used a lot of real water in it, and people were getting real water on them and would get just absolutely soaked. And because some of people back then were made of sugar, that was the end of them. No more. Let's get back to our story, though. Chapter 2, At Sea. Jim threw up repeatedly in his hands and wiped it in his hat. Oh, I know we're at sea now, he thought. I think it's time to get out of this apple barrel. He peered through a little hole in the side of the barrel, the bung. The barrel had not always been an apple barrel. It was at one time a bourbon barrel, and that was the bourbon barrel bung. And so he peeped through the bourbon barrel bung. Jim did, and to see if the coast was clear. I don't think there's a pirate on top of the lid anymore. And he slowly put some pressure to see if it would rise, and it did. So he peeked his head up a little bit and looked out of the barrel. He heard the squeaks and groans of the old wooden ship at sea.
God. Oh,
it sounded like a person. It sounded like somebody who's had severe intestinal problems, but it was really a ship. And the groans were the planks of wood rubbing against other planks sealed with creosote. And why that sounds like a human crying out in pain, I don't know. But it's just one of those things that does. He heard the waves lapping up against the side of the ship. Lap. Just lap, that's onomatopoetic. Onomatopoetic is not a word. Onomatopoeic, is that right? Plop, slap, plop, flap, slap, clap, plop. Like that, against the sides of the ship. And the ship was swaying. And then the ropes, as the ropes would grow taut, they would go... like that. And Jim thought, there's a hell of a lot of noise. I wonder if I can't shove some apple in my ear, like take little plugs out of the apple. I don't know if that's good for you or anything, but I could make earplugs. Cripes, so if somebody gets stuck in my ear, what if I get a little piece of apple stuck in the ear? Like you're taken hostage by pirates, which is pretty terrible to begin with. But then you've got this secondary irritant in that you've got a tiny little bit of apple that's gotten into your ear that you can't get out now. And it won't fall out. You can't get anything in there to get it out. And then it could be in there the whole time. I don't even know. It might kill you eventually. So Jim became really worried. But I'm not going to mention it again in this book, dear reader, because I just want you to know that all of this terrifying things that have happened to this young boy on this pirate ship, he's also got a piece of fruit in his ear.
lodged in there.
Oh, gosh. This life. So many things can happen. It changes so quickly. Our fortunes can change so quickly. And oh, the seas. We can't choose the seas that we ride upon, can we? So I thought this would be a smooth journey. I thought I would just hop aboard this pirate ship and I would cozy up in a little barrel of rotten apples and I would stay there and I would have the warm ASMR hum of the ship at sea, just lulling me into a sense, a stupor, but a warm one, a one that feels like love in the womb, the wooden womb of this barrel on a pirate ship at sea. But alas, sometimes the waves are large. Sometimes we are battered about. And maybe the ship won't hold. Maybe the mast will snap like a massive pretzel log that you wanted to snap because you were taking a bite of it. But not the mast. You're not taking a bite of a mast or dipping the mast into, what is this, a honey mustard thing? Oh, this is nice. Usually I put out the pretzel logs. I don't think to have different types of dip, though. Oh, cool. You know, that's not a bad idea. I am stealing some of these great party ideas from y'all for my little thing that I'm having in a couple weeks. And I hope you can make it. Bellinis. We're going to make them and then put stuff on them and everything. It's fun. It's Bellini party. How is that like pirates? Now, Jim was worried that they would never even get to the treasured island that he had heard so much about. He says, I have heard so much about the treasured island and the adventures that we would have there with our pirate maps. And one of the pirates, here I'm going to whistle what the pirate was whistling in Treasure Island. I have a cold sore. So it's not going to be my best whistling. Lily Valeri, blah, 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 blah. Pumpy do to 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 lily boy. Doesn't that make you think of the 18th century? What a hit that was. Oh, it's in Barry Lyndon. In Barry Lyndon, they're playing that on. It's great played on the penny whistle or the fife. If you have a penny whistle or fife, go play that song. It's called Lily Valeri or something like that. And it's a great old hit. Check it out. It's so funny, like I get V's and B's confused. You know? Why is that? I think, well, there's a language like that where it's not Tamil or something, is it? But like where you say in like the name Vivek would be Bebek. Anybody? South Asian friends? What am I thinking of? Anyway, I don't know if this has anything to do. You do run into pirates from other countries. So knowing other language and customs, very important. Very important. Love all my pirates all around the globe. You know that. You know that. Yar. You're so precious to me. And I don't care what shape hat. You can have a tri-corner hat. You can have a pirate do-rag or whatever they're called. All sorts of ways to wear your pirate hair or hat. Hat, no hat, doesn't matter. Patch, no patch, doesn't matter. Pirate, what are you saying, parrot or pirate? It's both, I combine the words. Sometimes parrots have little pirates on their shoulders, sometimes vice versa. Sometimes you can have parrots. I've known pirates that had, they're not just parrots, but all sorts of different other species of like pet birds they have. And right down to like finches. But they've got all sorts of those. I'm blanking on. I couldn't name one other kind of bird. Gosh, I used to have some as pets. I blanked it out, I think, because I'm, it was a terrible memory. Why is that? I don't know. It just, it was. I love birds. So I don't know why it was a terrible memory. I guess because I don't like losing, you know, I've allowed my dogs die. I had a dog die recently, you know, and a cat. I'm down to one pet. And it's just the love, the price of love, you know, is grief. And sometimes things sail away from us, don't they? We say, I was just on that ship having a good time, or it's gone now. Oh, time, oh, the sea. What a vast unknown thing we're on. A young kid in a barrel of apples. They don't even know we're here. Oh, what are they going to find out? Are we going to get to the treasure island? Then what? Will I be abandoned there? When does my life begin? When does it end? Where am I now? The ship came to a stop and anchored. Jim ran back to his barrel. He heard the pirates getting in the dinghy, or the launch. And so one of them took the launch, and the other took the dinghy. And I said launch, not lunch. That's what it says right there in the text. So they took that onto the shore. And Jim then was the only person on the ship. And he ran to the side, and he saw all the pirates were on the beach. And they had gotten off, and they had a map. And they were off to look for the pirate treasure. When Jim got a very diabolical idea. I'm the only one on the ship, he thought. Just me and my apples.
And me.
It was Invisible Pew. He had stowed away as well.
We could take the ship,
said Invisible Pew. That's just what I was thinking, said Jim. We could take the ship and sell it, and then I would have money to get my parents out of jail, because I think that's where they are.
I do, too. I'm sorry. I feel like you're in denial there.
I was deluding myself that they were coming back, but they're in jail, aren't they?
They are. I'm sorry, Jim.
It's okay, Pew. But if we steal the ship...
Steal the Angela Lansbury!
Yes, steal the Angela Lansbury. And then we could sell it to the Portuguese... And
what would we do with the money?
Well, pay off, get my parents out of prison.
We'd still have some left.
I don't know.
Get sandwiches.
We could get sandwiches.
Let's do it.
So Pew and Jim pulled the anchor up, and that's not easy for old kind of lame invisible pirate and a young boy to do, but they got it up. Because it had a capstan, and they used leverage. And they wound it all up, and it got up. And then when they did, Jim shouted, poop the, mizzen the mast, aye, aye, strike the dime hood. He yelled all the things. He yelled, Mark Twain it is. And they all these nautical things were yelled by Jim. To Pew, and they got that ship on the way, and the sails billowed and they inflated, and then they saw the men on the shore, yar, hey, yar, and they started firing. They fired musket fires at the ship, but it was too far already. The ship had already sailed, and they got in their dinghy and their launch, and they tried to catch up, but they couldn't. And they left the pirates in their wake as they pulled away and abandoned them there. Ha ha! Off on their way. Just Invisible Pew and Jim.
And me.
Who was it? It's the Ancient Mariner.
Yes. My first crew died because of the incident.
Oh, what's that? I killed a cormorant. Not a cormorant. An albatross. Oh, no. What's the difference?
I don't know. I think one is very bad luck. And that's the one I did. But I don't know if you just kill a cormorant. I'm not sure. But the albatross was like, ugh. This had ramifications. So I killed the albatross. Albatross was some kind of protective spirit on the boat. All the crew die.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yes. And then it's just me. And, pardon me. And then we got back to, I don't know where we were, Maine or some. They sold the ship. And I stayed on it. And they didn't realize that I had stayed on it. I disguised myself as a pirate. Killed using boredom. See, I can tell a story. What I'll do is I'll go to a wedding, traditionally. I'll grab someone by the arm, and I will just tell them this story that goes on. I'll even have chapter breaks. I'll go, chapter 3. And they just, a lot of times, perish. And this is my curse then. So that's why I'm out to sea, pirating, destroying people with my boring stories, and I hope that you have some sort of immunity to it.
Yes, said Jim. I'm also a tremendous bore, a lethal one practically. And my friend here, Invisible Pew, well, he's not very interesting either. Now we're all together, though, and it's much easier to crew the ship with 3 people than with 2. And so our intrepid crew of 3 set out on their ship to go to Portugal to sell it so that they could get the money and then do various things with it. Oh, the adventures we have when we take some risks, not settle for our lot like I'm going to spend my life in the Admiral Benbow Inn cleaning up the throw-up of pirates, or I'm going to get on that ship and I'm going to live my life in a wonderful, reckless way where adventure and sensation are paramount. And not pirate, I'm not probably going to do anything. When I say pirate, I don't mean literally we're going to go out and steal and everything. I'm a little child who has an adventurous, kind of romantic sense of what all this is. And there's no real murder or thieving or anything involved. This is just fun, you know? And there isn't really a Long John Silver. I just don't want to scare children. And nor do I want them to be pirates. So many things you can be. When I was a kid, though, they would make evil professions equally as accessible to you. They'd say, you know, when you counted your buttons, you know, say, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I think some of them were like thief. So I don't know. There was no moral judgment on your career choice when I was coming up. So these were all options. Say, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, like a doctor, or a pirate, murderer, or, you know, something, explorer. And they were all sort of on equal footing. And then you could just decide. And I think nowadays what it is that the kids, you don't tell kids about some of those options and say, why do they never mention pirate? Don't they want me to know that? You know, and they'll do things out of spite and all. So you got to tell kids that some of this is, I know it's not possible. I'll tell our children, hey, you can be in the mafia. I know they can't, a lot of them, because ethnically they don't qualify, a lot of them. But I'll say, you know, but your dreams, it's stupid to you know, when you're little, start with, oh, your dreams got to be realistic. No, they don't. Not for a while. Not until, I don't think you ever have to declare your major. I'd say your senior year should be when you're 90. And then you say, I know what I want to do now. But up until then, it's who knows? Who knows what they want to be or do? I'm glad people do choose some things because we need them. But other things, we only need them because we've made other bad choices. Like anything involving cars, which I think is an initial bad choice. We say, well, you know. And I think it's probably that way with ships. You know, because they had pirate ships before they had pirates. And then what do you think's going to happen? They could just make a pirate ship and nobody's going to get on it? So sometimes we invite these futures by making something available. Oh, my friends. I like to read. Is it okay that I've been just reading a story? Is that lame? I thought, what can I really give my friends on the radio today? I would love to give them the thrill that I had of hearing an engaging story that I could
I could submerse myself in. I'd say, I want to be in this story, just like it was a submersible, just a small little plastic submarine going to the bottom to look at all the wonderful, like a shipwreck or something, getting this tiny little thin plastic submarine of my imagination and just see how deep I can go down there. And I love that. I love doing that with you. And so I've chosen this absolute classic by James Earl Thompson, The Treasure Island, Robert Louis Stevenson. Excuse me. I knew it was a three-name person. There's all sorts of three-name people. There's one in Twin Peaks. He's very good. And there's Mark David Chapman. Lots of three-name people. Right now, though, I'm just thinking about our wonderful little story and going out to sea. And I'm also thinking, does it need sound effects? Because I know that's the sea. And children love that because they're less sophisticated now than they were. So, oh, we need sound effects and everything now. And now children are like, oh, I don't know what that is. There is no electronics. We live in a post-apocalyptic desert wasteland. I'm getting ahead of myself. Wait a minute. Nope, wrong ear. I'm sorry. Children are not easily amused yet. It's still very, very complicated. I probably do need sound effects. But it's going to get better, y'all. It's going to get so much better. And children will be using their imaginations again. Oh, it'll be lovely. So, you know what a doll is? Just a rock could be a doll. And, or a stick. A stick with a rock. Like, you could make the stick stick to the rock with tar. I can just take a lot of my creative life and my imagination was stimulated by people dump on Gilligan's Island, but imagination, innovation, things made out of coconut. It has no superior and it has no peers even in the league of coming up with creative uses of tropical fruit to do things that are necessities for surviving, you know, like make it a radio or anything. And that just got into my head. You can do a lot with nothing. And conversely, you can make nothing out of lots. And I've done this with this radio show. I think at the end of the day, say you have so much at your disposal, Hardy, and you have so many resources, and you have so much material, and then you consistently take it and reduce it into nothing, into a certain worthlessness. And I say thank you, because that's the larger message. You know, the larger message is that things don't need to be permanent, that you can make a temporary pirate ship and sail it, and then it's made out of sand. You can make your whole world and remake it constantly out of sand. Isn't that exhausting? No, it's invigorating. It's invigorating to recreate yourself constantly, to be updating and renewing your story, to always be moving ahead and changing. Oh, my goodness. I'm moving forward with you on a sea of possibilities, and our beautiful hearts are going to make a thing of greatness, and we are going to forge ahead through adversity, through unspeakable adversity, perhaps. But oh, there's no match for the beauty and the love and the creativity of the human heart, especially when all those components are in there together. Love, feel, grieve, feel joy, feel sadness. Move, explode, implode. And genuinely, be well. I love you so much. You're listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
How are you?
How are you?
Her name was Mahogany, twins' name was Ebony. 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 Her name was Mahogany, twins' name was Ebony.
I'm gonna be nasty.
trip is how you feel. You choose the nasty. Oh yes, it's real. It's how you feel. You choose the nasty. There are times when we harmonize with each other and become one with nature and reality, but these times are few. When after you have replenished yourself, the fear of the truth sets in. We split and you start to run again. Running, 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 running through women, men, jobs, people in life, looking for the answer. When you had it all along, you do the nasty.
Stay close. I love these chills in my feet.